Welcome to the Modern Investing with Side Pocket podcast, where we find some of the brightest minds in investing, entrepreneurship, real estate, tech, and more, and ask them, how do you stay financially ahead of the curve in the dynamic world we live in? But before we start, a quick disclaimer, the content we are discussing through this channel should not be understood or construed as financial advice. Regardless of anything to the contrary, nothing available on or through this channel should be understood as a recommendation to buy or sell securities or constitute financial advice. With that out the way, let's get started. Today, we're with Austin McCullough, a former financial advisor turned entrepreneur right here in Chicago. Austin has an exit under his belt and today is the founder and CEO of Reply Assist, helping financial advisors grow their practices. Welcome to the show, Austin.
Thank you for having me on. And based on how we were talking before the recording, I'm excited for this show.
Awesome. Great to have you. I'm really excited to just dig into your past, your story, and talk about how you're investing today. I thought a great place to start is, what are you doing today with your business and what are you up to in the world right now?
Yep. So one thing that comes to mind right off the bat, been in entrepreneurship for about 7 years. So I got started when I was in college, 27 years old now. First business was an online hiring agency that didn't work out too well. No point in even getting into the next one. Austin McCullough Advising started as a coaching business. And that's the business that actually sold. Obviously, I'm not including the financial advisor experience in there. We could always touch on that. But just to elaborate a bit, Austin McCullough Advising, again, starting this coaching business, it wasn't getting much traction. And so we converted it over time into a lead generation agency where we actually licensed the software for financial advisors because I realized that's what advisors wanted to pay for. Got the business to the point where it was growing well enough where I actually listed it and it was acquired. If you have any questions, we'll get around to that. And then working on Reply Assist now. The reason why I started Reply Assist though, advisors have a lot of lead generation softwares. In the past, they had a lot that existed to get conversations started, but those weren't leading to meetings scheduled or closed clients because there's too big of a gap in between the conversation started and even a meeting scheduled. There's a lot of responding to do, a lot of follow-ups. There's a lot of prospecting skill involved. And so we created Reply Assist to fill that gap. So we're actually about to launch. We haven't launched quite yet. We're expecting to be bringing on the first customers within about 3 weeks. The reason why that was delayed, we actually were originally expecting March, and obviously we're talking in April. There's been more development that's come into play. Like, for example, we want to make sure that the follow-ups are done properly, as well as we're going to have the AI chatbot actually responding on behalf of the advisors right at the beginning. But we realize that's not the right default option because of compliance, because of a lack of control. So we've reworked the first version of what we're going to market with to make sure that it's not going 0 to 100 like that. In an ideal world, we would love to have the software automate the LinkedIn outreach, respond to messages for the advisors, do their follow-ups all the way to get the meeting scheduled where they're not involved in any part of the process. That'd be the perfect version. But the way AI is currently, it's great, but not for every single specific use case. So what we're doing instead is Reply Assist. Well, and I'll get around to the original point. I'm just trying to give a little bit more context.
Yeah,
Reply Assist automates the starting of conversations by sending LinkedIn invites and messages. And then we have AI assisted reply, where as responses come in from prospects to our users or users' customers, they can click a button to generate a response that has a lot of context. So it'll give a good response. It's trying to lead the prospect towards scheduling a meeting, but our users will still be able to edit the message and have to be the ones to press send. And then we have automated follow-ups because, as you know, in sales, you don't want to screw around with the CRM, adjusting the follow-up due date, put the first name, last name, email, phone number, all that in, and then figuring out what to say to the prospect on the right day and even remembering to do it. So we have the automated follow-ups, which is a huge feature as well, but that's what slowed down the process. I think we'll grow pretty quickly because I have my established network of, just on LinkedIn alone, I have a few thousand advisors, and then we have some other partnerships, but just one step at a time. Let's put it that way.
For sure. Sounds good. That's exciting, man. And I'm wishing you the best of luck in your launch.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about what you're doing from the investment standpoint. You had some interesting responses, and I'd love to touch on what type of investor are you, like, while you're building your business, how are you investing your resources and getting some leverage there?
Is there anything that you want me to start with in particular? Because I know last time we talked, we went a few different directions with it.
Yeah, just I think maybe going back into like your when you first started, when you first learned about financial services and investments industry, what really piqued your interest in into getting into financial advising in the first place?
So I got into financial services transparently. I didn't get into it for the way that a typical person did. I was actually recruited in, and the person that I was working with, I'd known for, by that point, a little over a decade. It was someone who was well known in my community, very successful individual, and not just sports, but also in his professional career. And what I liked about the industry the most was the asset management, the wealth management side. Transparently, I didn't like the insurance side. I thought, and I still think that's pretty boring, not gonna lie. But I thought the whole concept of being able to have money work for you, and I know that's cliche nowadays. I thought that was a really nice concept because so many people, they just trade their time for money all the time. And actually, to go full circle, that's a huge driver why I like entrepreneurship so much. To me, gonna be honest, it seems like hell to have to work to 70 years old. At least required work. Like I'm somebody, I like to get things done. And so I think I will always want to work, but in terms of having to, that just does not sound great. So that's why the financial services industry is to try and front end load the work in my career so that I don't have to go work for somebody else for the rest of my life, truly.
Yeah, like what I always like didn't like when I was younger, hearing, oh, it just takes time. It just takes time. No, it just takes getting things done and moving on. And if you focus on the time aspect, you're going to be focused on just giving it time, or you just think about getting results.
And that's such a big perspective shift too. Just those two. We obviously don't need to go down that route, but I just
No, yeah, for sure. But yeah, that was a huge game changer for me, and that's where I was pushing away because I hate it when people are like, "You just got to get some experience. You just got to pay your due." What the hell does that even mean? No, I just what's the formula? Let me bake the cake and enjoy it later. Let's go.
That's the thing too. It's like a lot of people think in terms of the 40-hour work week and how that only applies Monday through Friday. Like you can condense your experience and your knowledge a ton by working, and not everybody likes this, but you could work every day. You can work more than 8 hours in a day. Most people who are working 40-hour work weeks aren't actually working the full 40 hours. Let's be completely honest. People are on their phones, they're talking to their coworkers, they're calling their family, they're getting appointments, and you definitely don't need to have years to get a lot of experience. You can condense those reps into. Still takes years, but you can condense the reps.
Yeah, for sure. So like when you got into financial services, you were more so just focused on selling insurance products.
No, not necessarily just insurance products. So I had my, well, first I got the life insurance license, and then I was grandfathered into the SIE after getting my 6, 63, and 65 licenses. But the company that I was at, they had a pretty split focus between insurance and investments. So it's not, I actually don't like the firms that are constantly pushing insurance as like the main thing all the time. It has its time and place. Insurance is great, but a lot of the time, some financial professionals will sell it like insurance is the end all be all solution, and that's the way to build the wealth. That's not my thesis. I think insurance has its place for, let's say somebody passes away. You don't want to put a family in a bad situation if their main breadwinner dies. But in terms of wealth accumulation, it's like a glorified savings account a lot of the time. If you look at some insurance policies, and I just don't think that's the case. And it depends. There are different types of insurance policies. And again, it depends on everybody's situation. But that's why even you look at Side Pocket, you guys don't do anything related to insurance, do you?
Not yet. Not yet. Like you mentioned, there is a time and place, and insurance products do serve a purpose, but we're primarily first and foremost focused on helping people grow their capital in the markets and investment management firm. And that's our primary focus right now. But in the future, we will continue to grow our offering and offer various additional services like we already do with estate planning, tax planning, etc. But yeah, basically, that's the stance there.
And one thing, actually, I want to give you kudos on that because I think too many companies try to go too wide too soon. And so they can't really, like, how many companies can you think of out there that are known for one thing? Like, when I think of Nike, I think of sports apparel. Like, that's a very specific thing. I'm not thinking of dress shirts, right? It's different. And I think they have dress shirts, they're a big enough company. But like with Side Pocket, it's good that you guys aren't trying to go do everything all at once because a lot of companies, I think, in general, just try to get into that game because they want to be everything for everybody. But then you don't get any traction because then the prospects or the in your marketing, it doesn't attract anybody.
Yeah, for example, building out a funnel for a client. It's who are you specifically here to help? Who are you adding the most value that no other advisor can support as well as you are? Really find that sweet spot. And now you can get traction. But it's also very easy as an independent advisor or business owner, et cetera, to, oh, my customers would also like this. Oh, they would also like this. Let's partner. Let's rev share. It's not that it's not possible, because Procter & Gamble is a great example of going wide and they own a lot of brands, but you got to think strategically, establish one revenue center, then introduce another to, you know, grow the LTV on your customers there. Like, once you sell them your service, what else do they need? Maybe they need somebody to take those initial calls and pre-screen. Maybe they need to hire someone internally to do the reply assist stuff. And maybe that's another thing you offer. So you can build and deepen your offering within a clear context of helping your clients automate as much of the sales process as possible so they can focus on serving their clients. And if, as long as it's like within that, then it makes sense. But if all of a sudden you're selling Nikes to your clients, you're selling this, then it's like you lose the power of having a clear positioning of the go-to person for X. As your company grows, your team grows, and then it's just a matter of like, all right, how do I keep leveraging the company and what other relationships can I put together that are strategic? And you can think about it long ways. Again, like we've had clients at SidePocket go, hey, do you guys know anybody that can do financial planning or what have you? And that's why we're establishing those partnerships with advisory firms that can help us with that. But yeah, it starts with that focus, and then you could build from there. But if you do it all at once, then every sales process and funnel takes time to build, validate, optimize. And you can't do that with a lot of products if you're a 1 to 5 person team.
And that's super well said. That's actually part of what's delayed our launch, is we don't want to have our users do much work to schedule a meeting. And even when a meeting is scheduled, we need to stop the follow-ups. And something that's delayed that is, in terms of compliance, not every single financial services firm uses the same meeting scheduling software. Some block Calendly, some have internal tools that they use through Salesforce. And so that's something like that's very niche focused. Whereas if we're just selling the software to coaches and consultants, they don't have compliance to buy. We could just all have them sign up for a Calendly account, or we could build the tool internally. But you're right, we know what to create because of that. And I'm willing to delay the launch to make sure it's a better experience for the customers. So again, like I mentioned, with SidePocket, it's if you're talking to a prospective client, customer, user, the way you would pose the software to compared to Robinhood would be even different than a financial advisor as well. But yeah, it blows my mind how many companies don't spend more time getting clear on who exactly they're selling to and what they want to be best at, because I don't know, that's what's worked well for me, and I'm not bright enough to juggle a ton of things all at once anyways.
No, you're on point. It's just hard, because when you know your product so well, you've invested so much time, and then it's, I just want to sell this to anybody that'll value it. And it's okay. So if you're going to go out and spend your time and invest money and time in finding customers, who's most likely to do business with you? What are they struggling with in their life? What other solutions like yours? There's tons of them out there that they've already gotten approached by, maybe burned by. And why didn't those work? And why is your solution going to be different for them? And that requires you to leave the context of being an expert on your product to be an expert on your customer. And but yeah, as far as investing, this is an investment podcast, right? What did you, so you learned that your thesis as an advisor wasn't really all about risk management and leveraging insurance products for savings. What was missing that it just didn't really click with you?
So when I was like, I don't even know if I was 18 yet, because I remember I had my mom go help me open up the account. I was going through like Investopedia or something. And in my later years in high school, I started to get really interested in money. And I just stumbled across mutual funds and started reading up on them, not any IRAs, Roth IRAs, or anything like that. But I was looking at mutual funds. So I sought out a financial advisor in my city. So I'm from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And we went in and I got some investments set up. So obviously in the background, I was paying attention to the market over the years. That would have been around, I'm just trying to give some type of timeline, around 2015, 2016. Mm-hmm. Oh, I go to a community college to play football. So I'm not as actively paying attention to the markets and whatnot during then. But then as I turn either 19 or 20, I get into financial services. And at the same time, I was doing more day trading on like Robinhood. I was still a student, was still a financial professional, so I wasn't doing much, but a little bit, just because I thought it was interesting on social media, as you see a few successes of the many failures, let's just put it that way, of people trying to trade on their own. I know people do it well, but a lot also don't. But I had this kind of, I don't know if I want to use the word thesis, I had this philosophy of wanting to not just have my money sit there. That was the big thing. Because like when you go look at, I grew up banking through Wells Fargo. What's the interest rate in those accounts? Like 0.01%. Like it's ridiculously low. And so I didn't want to have the money just sit there. I want to have it working for me, because this was before I started really getting into entrepreneurship. So up until I was about, I don't know, 20 or 21, I liked that philosophy. So during that transition, going from finding a financial advisor, getting some money into mutual funds, day trading through Robinhood a little bit, and then getting started as a financial professional, that was like the first segment of what I liked about investing. I was trying to read up on more stuff about Warren Buffett. I remember I was listening to Jim. Do you know Jim Cramer?
Yeah.
I was listening to his daily show on Apple Podcasts, not on whatever news channel it's on. I can't remember. But that was my thinking. And then I got into the online hiring agency, and that's where it pivoted. So I don't know the best way to represent this, but I went from wanting my money to work for me, but not having to manage it, to being willing to take that money. So that was actually where I liquidated the original mutual fund that I had and took money out of TD Ameritrade. And I was putting it into the first business. And that actually also, that went from the first business, which I hate to say the name, but Supercorn Tutoring. Not a good name. I didn't name it. My co-founder is Chinese. So it's like the word Supercorn doesn't resonate as much with a Chinese individual who grew up in China and Chengdu than somebody from Iowa. But I digress. Anyways, to get to the main point. During then, I really got interested in investing in the business, because I saw these people who were continuing to develop their skills and make more. Let's bring in our sales background. If you continue to get better at sales, you close more deals, you close more deals, you make more money. When you make more money, you have things to do with. But I think a lot of people, and obviously the typical investing that I was doing is the right option for most people, because most people don't want to bear the risk of entrepreneurship. But for me, going and getting a normal return in the market as my main primary source of growing my wealth wasn't attractive to me, because I was willing to take on the additional risk. That leads into, let's fast forward to after selling Austin McCullough Advising, which were rebranded Elite Goals Accelerator, we're bootstrapping Reply Assist, which for anybody who doesn't know, we're self-funding it. I'm self-funding it rather than raising capital, because that's a whole conversation in and of itself. But putting money into this business, because Reply Assist and Woda will be able to pay me out in yearly returns, as well as I assume we'll eventually have an exit, will be much larger than me just going and putting money into the S&P 500. And let me just put a disclaimer. Again, I'm not hating on anybody who does that. That's very smart. And after, again, likely we'll sell Reply Assist, there's going to be a portion that I set aside for that. But at that same time, it won't be my whole portfolio, because I want to get into either angel investing or venture capital following Reply Assist. And so it's just a different type of thinking. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. It's totally makes sense. You figured out you didn't like the returns you were getting or that were available to you in the market at the time. And you're like, and then of course you have an entrepreneur bug and you went that route and you're like, instead of me investing in other companies, I can invest in my own, right? And
yeah.
And then you have a lot of influence there in its success. And that's your edge, because the theme with every investor, that everyone has their own strategy that they like to do. Some people are 95% of their money is in crypto and they have millions of dollars and that's what they do. And to someone else, that could be risky. And then that someone else should probably look at something else that's more in line with their risk tolerance and their investor persona. So what you just shared is fantastic. Like you're aware of what your risk tolerance is and where you want to invest your capital and how you want to see that turning into a return with an exit. And so you have a clear plan there.
Yeah. And that's where, actually I was going to go down another path, but you did a good job of recapping it. So I'll keep it at that.
Sure. No problem. So that really helps. And as far as, have you considered angel investing on the side along the way? Because, you know, founders all meet each other and considered that, or?
I did. I actually, it's ironic that you asked that question out of all questions, because I've put probably more thought into that than I should have, which leads into the answer. The only way I'd be open to that is if it's related to somehow also benefiting Reply Assist. Because if it was in the financial services space, that makes sense. Key partnerships and whatnot. That's other ways I've looked into, is not necessarily angel investing, but key partnerships where we can benefit one another as companies and grow quicker that way. But let's say I had an old high school friend. I haven't, but let's say I have an old high school friend who's like, hey, I have this idea. Will you help me? It's in like the food space. I'd be like, cool. I eat food every day, but I don't know anything about selling food, marketing food. So when I do get into that, it's either going to be, again, post exit for Reply Assist, or once we're growing at the point where I'm truly, this is super cliche, but this is in the real meaning of it, truly working on the business rather than actually working in it. And I'll probably always work on in it to a certain extent. But once I'm more in like a strategy role, that rather than the day-to-day, like currently, since we're still monetizing and I'm our best salesperson right now, I'm still selling, I'm still marketing. And that's what I should be doing, because even though I've worked in this space for years, it's still different. LinkedIn changes. The way financial advisors work changes. There's a hell of a lot of turnover in the financial services industry. I don't know if anybody knows that. If you're within like the first year and a half or 2 years, there's 90% turnover. So I can tell you my LinkedIn network from 2 years ago is very different.
Is all your money tied up in your company? Do you have any money on the side and less risky stuff like the markets or CDs or what have you?
Money on the side, yes. Cash, yes. Investments, no. Majority in the business, yes. I get distracted easily, so I wanted to answer those quickly. Have you ever read Think and Grow Rich?
Yeah, good old Napoleon Hill.
Napoleon Hill. That's still my favorite book. You hear things about if he was legitimate or not. I don't really care. It's an awesome book. It changed my life. I won't tell anybody the secret. I always make them figure it out. Anyways, do you remember that section in the book where it talks about burning the ships?
Yeah.
I'm a huge proponent of that. I think some people who are more naturally intelligent can juggle a little bit more, but I can't. Like I get sidetracked easily, and that's why I don't want to give myself other options. I do sometimes think about that. I'm not going to lie. Like when you're going through tough times in entrepreneurship, like probably 3 months ago, I was going through a really rough patch and I was thinking maybe it would have been a better idea to raise capital. But I don't have to give up control, and I'm glad that we took this route. But bootstrapping, it's going to add a lot of stress to your plate. And people, like when they talk about stress and entrepreneurship, like I don't think a lot of people truly internalize it. When I'm saying stress, I'm saying like waking up with anxiety. It's never off your mind. It impacts you physically. Like I haven't been able to put on muscle as well as I used to. I get with aging, that's part of it. But like the main part is I'm stressed all the time. And you physically manifest that. So it's a very specific group of people who want to take on that risk. It doesn't mean that you have to have the talent to. You just have to be able to, from an emotional standpoint, bear that burden. And it's not for everybody. And that's why, to cap the point off, do you know Jensen? I think it's Jensen Huang. I think it's how you say it. I don't know how to say his last name. The CEO of NVIDIA.
Oh, okay.
He actually, he was in the Acquired podcast, if you've heard of that, really another really great podcast. And they actually asked him something about going through the process, whatnot. And he said if he could restart, he wouldn't have built the company. Obviously, he's worth a lot of money. NVIDIA is worth, what, trillions of dollars? He's a CEO. Like, he's worth, I'm sure he's a billionaire at this point, if not multiple. And it's just, you got to look way out in the future of what kind of life you want. And actually, I'm glad that we're talking about this, because this is relevant. My whole philosophy with why I wanted to get into entrepreneurship, besides obviously being attracted to money and having nice things, it was, you see a lot of people don't get to spend time with their family, whether it's wife or kids or parents or siblings. They're limited to how much time they get to spend with their family, because you spend a lot of time sleeping, you spend a lot of time at work, you spend time on your fitness, at least minimal time for family. And I never want, that's why like I'm a single male right now, I have no children. I want to get into a place where I can choose completely to work on my own hours before I start to focus on that area of my life, because I don't want to have to sacrifice the family, because I know that's important. And to come back to the whole point, I don't multitask well. So trying to focus completely on work and completely on my family wouldn't work well. So I have a very all or nothing personality, if you can't tell that already. And it comes with its drawbacks, but at the end of the day, I'm glad that I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. And again, that's the key thing, is really understanding what kind of risk you can tolerate. It's a big thing. It's nice to be all aggressive with your investing, but that some people are more risk tolerant than others on an emotional level. Like, you don't want your money working for you while you're stressing out if it's going to work well or not, because that's just too expensive. I think if you can factor that into your ROI, it almost makes it now even worth it. And maybe that's what he was talking about. Like, he would have done it a whole different way.
And that's what, sorry, keep going.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's funny. I was talking with my mom last time there and my parents were in town. And I'll just be very transparent here. I'm very fortunate that the point of where I'm at now, but, and it's been, because I can say this in hindsight, it's worth it with how far along I am. But in terms of entrepreneurship, I don't know if I would have gone down this path again if I were to restart. If you want to have really nice things, like it, like I'm clearly going down the right path, but you can live a really nice lifestyle and have a little bit less nice things. If you just go get into a sales career, you're going to have to get kicked in the stomach or deal with rejection. Let's just put it that way. Deal with rejection more than the average career professional. But I'm going to be completely honest. A sales professional doesn't deal with the level of risk and stress of a true entrepreneur creating something from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can live a nice lifestyle just working in sales without having to work 24/7 and have that on your mind share all the time.
Yeah. And I think that, again, really considering that, and it's like me personally, I have a very high risk tolerance. Not everything always works out, but I'm okay. I'm enjoying the journey. Everyone has their own approach. And I think the more that we know, we understand that about ourselves, the more awareness we have around that, that we can make better decisions, whether it's career, investing, the relationships we're in, et cetera.
And actually, let me tag one thing on that. I haven't talked about this as much recently because a lot of the time the topic is pointless. But in terms of this subject, I think it's very relevant, especially for anybody who's like a younger listener. Just put that on the damn phone and just study yourself, because when you have that self-awareness, it applies in all areas of your life, even your investment thesis, because you figure out what you want long-term. I just think so many people, especially in our generation, they don't know how to critically think because they're constantly distracted by another notification. And
right. You don't have the space to figure yourself out, because everyone's always competing for your attention and your attention is going elsewhere. I totally agree.
Constantly. And I know it's ironic saying that as like a salesperson marketer, but you got to have space to yourself to think, and not enough people do. No tool is going to do it completely for you, but tools are extremely helpful to guide you along the right path. And so that sounds like that's going to be a really good fit for a lot of people who need it.
Yeah. Even just like on personality assessments, right? Like, how many of those have you taken or other people take? And you, each one kind of teaches you a different aspect about yourself, so that you know how to navigate your direction with more education and making more smarter decisions of like how to position yourself and create the life you want. And so those tools are definitely helpful, but I totally agree with your point of the constant battle for our attention. It's, I think the tools is a great, because they force you to take time out and figure that out. But that the more time we invest there, it ultimately impacts our decisions. So I'm glad we're talking about it. It's like the highest leveraged opportunity is to develop your self-awareness.
I agree. And I think the reason why I don't typically talk about that more is because it's not super tactical. But like at the core, like that's such a firm foundation that a lot of people are lacking.
Mm-hmm. And it's been super helpful for me and like for you and for many people, and I definitely want to keep promoting that. What kind of impact do you want to leave on the world, or what do you want to be remembered for at the end of your life?
I have, and I'm trying to think a little bit more. There's an initial answer that comes to mind, but so the first thing that comes to mind, the type of person I want to be remembered as is, first off, somebody who gets shit done. Because there's a lot of people, I won't go way into depth on this, but look at politics. Like, people talk all the time, but not a lot is typically accomplished. I'm talking on both ends. And when somebody gets things done, I think of Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban doesn't have to, he hasn't for a long time had to work at all. And yet right now he's trying to improve, what is it, the pharmaceutical space, so that people don't have to pay as much for medications. He gets things done, and he's taking his skills and everything that he has sacrificed to get himself to this point to make the world a better place. For what? Just because it's the right thing to do. And so That's why I get excited with higher leverage opportunities like entrepreneurship, such as Reply Assist, is because at the end of the day, I am not the nicest person in the world. I'm not an altruistic person, but I do want to help people because I feel like it's the right thing to just do. And whether you see it fortunately or unfortunately, money helps you do that. Mm-hmm. It does. Money is a great tool. And you can go change the world without money, but if you want to do it without money, it just takes more time. To come back to the original point, somebody who gets things done, because it doesn't just help my life, but helps other people's lives. Like that's at the core of entrepreneurship. That's what entrepreneurship is. It's providing solutions to solve other people's problems, wants, needs. And somebody who just falls through with what they say they're going to do. I feel like honesty is lacking a lot in our world. Integrity is lacking a lot. And definitely just people who, my confidence comes from doing what I say I'm going to do. I think that's my superpower, is I will stress myself the hell out because I need to get things done. Just because if I say I'm going to get something done today, I'm going to get it done today. And if I don't get it, if I need to send somebody an email today and I'm not able to get around to it or get a project done, I will let the person know that it's going to take me more time. So I want to model that in my life, so other people have a model to go off of. I don't know. We talked about him in our last call, but like Alex Ramosi, like he's known for, I have nothing to sell you. And that's, I like that concept a lot, because does he benefit by getting people in his ecosystem? Yes, because his portfolio holding company, but he genuinely wants to help people. And then the very, very small minority of people who can benefit him, they'll fall into his lap in the right way because he's providing so much value that it just give and he receives. So I don't know what's the best way to summarize that, but I just want to be known for somebody who actually gets shit done.
Awesome. Yeah. How do you measure, or sorry. Okay. So how are you living that with Reply Assist?
That's actually a really good question. What came to my mind immediately, I'm going to give a contrast. This is for anybody in entrepreneurship. It's a huge perspective shift, but not enough people get it. One thing that's front of mind, I actually have, I'm looking at my goals on my desk, but I have a certain amount of meetings per week we want to be scheduling per user. And what I said, not every entrepreneur focuses on that. That's why many people fail. Do we have a revenue goal for the month? Yeah, we do. We also have the results for our customers goal, which is important because at the end of the day, you get the right results for the customers. The revenue is the byproduct. Too many people focus on the revenue. I'm not going to lie. I have a large enough network of advisors. I can go bullshit a lot of people, make a lot of quick sales. But you know what that's going to do? It's going to create negative brand. And then we would lose momentum. We're not going to get referrals. And then I would have to bust my ass to go get a bunch of leads and prospects in the door and close customers in the near future after that. It's just like, selfishly, it doesn't benefit anybody for me to be selfish. It's the weirdest like duality of life. And so how I'm doing that with Reply Assist, delaying the launch, focusing on them actually getting results, that will benefit me. So again, like I say, even selfishly, I will benefit by helping other people. Not enough entrepreneurs see that. We would love to be able to actually show the dollars this converts into for our financial advisor clients, but we can only really track the meeting schedule because since we're not handling the actual meetings for the advisors, we could go put the best leads on a plate for them. And if they don't close the deals, that's out of our control, but it makes the process a hell of a lot easier to help them get the meeting scheduled and have a lot of prospects who are actually interested in meetings. Being as experienced as I am in this industry in terms of sales and marketing for advisors, when we do, that's going to help them a lot. And then the true byproduct of that as well is we get advisors and the right quality people in contact with consumers. We're helping more consumers actually get their finances in order because a lot of people just, at least in the United States, they're just not on top of their finances, a ton of credit card debt. And that's a bigger conversation, but does that answer what you were asking?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And as an investor in your own business, like in the industry that you're in, what headwinds do you see within the next like year or 2 years that you have on top of mind, maybe AI or different platforms changing different rules, or what do you pay attention to that are potential risks to your business? And what are you doing to mitigate them?
There's two things that come to mind. One is compliance. Another one's LinkedIn. In terms of compliance, very reasonably, some firms are more worried about compliance than others. They're worried about AI tools completely derailing what's said. We've done a lot to factor in when building replies just to make sure that the chatbot isn't providing recommendations, isn't giving advice. Quite frankly, my philosophy along advisors prospecting is they shouldn't be getting in trouble with compliance, because if you're getting in trouble with compliance, you're trying to get too product specific while messaging. And that's not effective to get meetings scheduled anyways, because then you're trying to sell products over LinkedIn messages. And why would you sell products before you know about the individual's situation, before their finances, before their previous investing experience, before their goals? You can't provide anything. Otherwise, you're not being a good advisor. So compliance, but there's workarounds to that. Just some compliance teams are slower movers. So that's why we're starting the process of talking to them now. Mm-hmm. And then LinkedIn, since LinkedIn doesn't want to have spam, they always want to make sure to limit how many invites you can send, how many messages you can send each day, which actually, it's funny. Now you're able to send about 100 invites on LinkedIn per week, whereas you used to be able to send about 500. So they've reduced it by 80%. When that happened, I was actually really worried. That was back in 2021. I think it was actually good because it took a lot of the just spam automation out, where people are just blasting everybody. Obviously, I'm a big fan of prospecting, which is outbound sales, but you don't just need quantity, you need quality as well. And what's actually cool about a tool like Reply Assist is that's why we've been such big advocates of the automated follow-ups, is because then as long as a prospect accepts our user into their network, the automated follow-ups will stay top of mind. And so that's a separator right there. So in terms of compliance and LinkedIn, those are the two real main concerns. I'm trying to think of others.
What about opportunities you're excited for? AI, a big one, as that keeps developing, that's going to help? Or is there something else that you're also pretty excited about?
I do think AI. People think you just slap on AI and it works. It's not how it works. Like we've spent months and it's still not where it needs to be. That's why we don't have the automated responders, because we don't have full trust in it yet. We have it, but it's not where it needs to be yet, which is fine. But there's just so much that AI can do to reduce even more manual labor than what was required in the past. And that just frees up time for advisors to do whatever they want. And obviously that's just advisors, it helps all professionals. So AI is the big opportunity there. I can't really think of anything nothing stands out the way that AI does. AI is just like the huge one. But I think there's a little bit too much hype and like people think it's just, you slap it on the tool and it's all great. No, it needs to be for a very specific use case. And you can't just go plug in ChatGPT and it's going to work. So the way people view AI needs to be different. But yeah, AI is not going away anytime soon. And I think what we're going to be able to do with it is going to be crazy.
Cool. No, I hear you. And as far as the investment landscape with tools, really curious on what your thoughts are with Side Pocket and what we're up to. What's your perspective there?
So actually, when I downloaded the app a couple of weeks ago, but when I was going through creating the account yesterday, I like that one thing that stood out to me at the beginning was just showing the average return, whatever's on the left side when looking at all the different allocations. Is that what they're called in the app?
Strategies.
Let me actually, here, I'll do this. I'll pull the app back open so I'm not fumbling around with exactly where it's at.
Yeah, no worries. Go ahead.
There was one specific portion that I was looking at. Was it in? Yeah, I was in Explore. When you go Explore, and then obviously I was looking at Growth. Like I'm a 27-year-old. I'm not going to be looking at what are the other options. Preservation. I will. Speculative. That's another one. But anyways, I like how the annual return, you actually show that. And then you can see the inception date at the beginning. I didn't pay attention to the other ratios quite as much. But I do like how you break down like lower risk versus moderate versus higher risk. And then there was also, I remember there was some form that it was asking about like your investment time horizon. Cause you guys, I know you said you're building out something more for it, but do you know what form I'm talking about? It tries to get a little bit of the investors or consumers risk tolerance.
Yeah. It's the which side pockets are right for me.
Yeah. One thing actually, I'm curious, and I know you probably don't get into this on these calls, but what was the inspiration between, let's click on the subscribe, the monthly price, or like basically the fee, how you give the option of one or this one is the price per month or certain percent of total invested equity?
Yeah, our fee is 0.79% per year.
Yep.
Accounts over $9,000. And It's the fees, the light and all access, the $3.29 and $5.95. Those are really just to give people a way to go ahead and just try us out. No one, I can't imagine anybody just throwing a bunch of money at an advisor just off the bat, right? It's a way for people to just try it out with a small amount of money, a couple grand, a couple hundred dollars, and just to get familiar with the app, build confidence with us. And then slowly we can help, of course, set up retirement accounts, roll over IRAs, and help really grow the balance further. It's just the thought process behind it is just make a nice, easy entry point. Our minimum is $250 to open up an account, make it really easy for people to get started with us.
That makes sense. The way I was thinking about it when I was actually just prepping for the call or the podcast, it's like the middle ground. You get like Robinhood and then you have financial advisors. You guys seem to be like right in the middle of that. So with that, one, would you say is that accurate? And then two, who would you say is the, probably the best persona of who you guys are marketing to? Who's an ideal client?
Yeah, great question. So yeah, we're definitely right in between in that world where, because all our, like on SidePocket, you can't buy a specific stock, right?
Yep.
We're not, we're here to basically give fully built out institutional grade strategies that are designed to manage your risk in the market and continue growing your capital. We rebalance monthly, so it's very active. Mm-hmm. And no one really offers like tactical strategies like this on the marketplace. And Robinhood, you're there. You have to figure out what you want to buy, when to buy it, when to sell it, what to invest in long, like whatever strategy, you have to come up with one yourself. Yep. And that takes a lot of skill and focus, which most people, again, there's so many people out there that don't even know the stock market crashes until they get off of work and see it on the news. And just because we're doing other things, you know, not everybody's glued to the monitor every day and trading. And so it's those people that, and when you don't have the skills, you might take a stab at it like I did in the pandemic when everybody got on the crypto trading bandwagon. And I was trading and I'm like, yeah, I'm winning. But then like, how much time did I just spend trading? That was like 4 hours and I only made $5 and I think I'm winning. But then there was a lot of work. So I really learned firsthand how much work this takes and how much expertise it takes. I've heard someone mention to me, like being a good trader, it's like being a good brain surgeon. This, you can high level see, oh, that's a graph. When it's going up, it's making money. When it's going down, it's losing money. Great. But there's so much nuance there that you need to understand to then actually get the results you're looking for. Again, and that takes a lot of time, mentoring and, you know, class, you know, whatever, studying, which again, most people don't have a lot of time for. And then, and then with like other platforms where other robo-advisors, where you can put money into target dated funds or just these, just target dated funds or direct and index funds. And you hope for that 7 to 10% per year return by the time you retire. It's that hope and pray strategy. And it's, if you're hoping to make 10% per year and then potentially tolerate a 50% risk like we saw in 2009 or in the pandemic when the market dropped over 30%, let's hope you weren't trying to retire then, because the people that were now have to work a couple more years. And so there was no really, there was no real solution there for people to put their money in the market and have it grow while managing the risk. Sure, you could put things like stop losses, but that's already considered advanced for most people.
Yeah, you got to be aware of it in the first place too. And a lot of people don't even know what those are.
Right. So we're just like, hey, this is a done for you solution. You can see exactly like all the stats in there. Other platforms that I've seen, they don't share what the Sharpe ratio is, which is the risk adjusted return. How actually profitable is this strategy? Yeah. Is it exciting that you made 20%, but you tolerated the risk of wiping out your entire account? Not really. And then that's the other downside. That's the other side that's not really discussed very often. It's yeah, sure, you can chase returns. And then the whole other side is just by implementing good risk management, you can also improve the performance of your portfolio. And to do that, again, it takes skill, it takes time. So we're like, hey, we can automate a lot of this stuff with today's technology. And then allow people just go ahead and put their money to work using these strategies.
And that's one thing that I like. And one thing that I think you're going to find refreshing. I'm not an advocate to talk on the financial advisor space. I'm not an advocate of advisors who also do the day-to-day trading, reallocation of their clients' portfolios, because you have people like your company, you have people on Wall Street who, like, some people, that's their entire role. That's all they're doing all day, every day. Like, a brain surgeon's not serving food, right? The better example would be the brain surgeon isn't doing, I'm assuming, the consultation with the clients. I could be wrong, but the point is, a financial advisor, I know this better than most people, spends a ton of time selling and prospecting and doing marketing. So if they're doing a huge chunk of time, that leaves them at a disadvantage compared to somebody who spends all their time just on making sure to do, what are the annual reports of public companies called? Like, what, not 401ks, what are those called?
S1s, 10ks?
10ks, 10ks, what I was thinking. Those might be the quarterly. I get it all mixed up. I'm not as involved in that world anymore. But anyways, portfolio managers, that's what they're doing all day, every day. They're reading annual reports. They're paying attention to the market all the time. Most advisors aren't. And so they shouldn't be, like, I like that aspect of allowing even the consumers to have more of a hands-off approach rather than you got, that's why I'm not a big fan of Robinhood either, is because then they have to, there's just too much involvement. I think we just touch on both sides. So coming in the middle is good for consumers.
Yeah, exactly. And I really appreciate that, your questions and just your feedback overall on Side Pocket. I think landed really well. What advice would you give to somebody considering getting started with Side Pocket?
It's a good one. But what I would say is, if you're teeter-tottering between something like Robinhood and Side Pocket, just give Side Pocket a try, right? I don't know how many people I know who have gotten into trading, myself included. It sounds like you as well, who do it. You get excited about it for a couple months and it dies out. And the only people make quick money are the people get lucky. You don't make money quickly by skill through trading. It's just, that's just not how, or you don't make many money quickly through anything without luck. So there's that. And then if you feel like you, for whatever reason, don't need the help of an advisor and you need some guidance, you don't want to go the Robinhood route, that's where I'd say it would fit in really well. If that answers the question.
Yeah. And one thing to clarify, it's not that we're replacing advisors. Advisors do play a whole different role that's very equally, if not a little bit more important, which is like helping you create a whole financial plan, having a clear outlay, like how much you're budgeting and how much you want to set aside for investments. But then in your choice to invest, if you're considering robo-advisors, where again, we'll do it all. And these are fully built strategies. You don't have to worry about when to buy, when to sell. It's all managed. And then you could get on with your day and do other things that light you up and that you want to focus on.
And not be constantly looking at ticker, or what do they call when it's not just looking at the tickers? There's a tick. Isn't that what it's called? When you can see like each, not second, but each minute, you can see how it changes. Yeah. I'm talking about.
Yep.
The candlesticks, you don't have to watch that all the time. Like, even if you just have to pay attention to it nonstop. That means if the market's open, you can't really get anything done during that period of time. Yeah, it consumes your whole day. Yeah.
Yes. So, if you don't want to do that, then this is a great option, basically.
There you go.
Yeah, I really appreciate having you on the show, Austin. Thank you very much for your time. I really enjoyed this chat and looking forward to keeping in touch and having you on here again in the future.
I had a great time, Arthur. Seriously.
This podcast is sponsored by Side Pocket, the only automated robo-advisor on the market that combines multiple tactical asset allocation investment strategies to generate returns. If you don't have the time to professionally trade and you're tired of being at the whim of the market's ups and downs, consider using Side Pocket to automate your investing. Side Pocket monitors the markets and automatically rebalances your holdings each month for you to maximize returns while protecting against losses. Losses are not a one-to-one relationship. When you lose 50% of your portfolio in a bad quarter, it requires 100% return the next just to break even. That's why Side Pocket applies sophisticated quantitative methods, including tactical asset allocation, to systematically minimize these drawdowns and consistently protect and grow your hard-earned savings. To learn more, visit sidepocket.com.